Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I do believe in our high schools, in our middle schools, in our universities, we should continue to have the tradition that we've been having in this country for years. And we have a women's facility and a men's facility. You know, it's worked out pretty well, and I don't think we need any further government interference. The confusion by the national media and the New York Times of Indiana Religious Freedom Bill, Mississippi, and Georgia Religious Freedom Bill, that's not the case. This was basically a restroom privacy issue.
That's North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory talking on NBC's Meet the Press about a bill passed in his state forbidding transgender bathrooms. Now, this has somehow become the cause celeb in the United States over the last several months. Many could see it coming. And here it is. We have major businesses that are deciding, just kind of unilaterally, it appears, to say, look, we're just going to preemptively decide that anybody can use any bathroom, any place. It's not just about, say, the Wilkin bathroom. We got two bathrooms in our house. Guess what? Men and women use the same bathroom, one at a time, generally speaking. Is that analogous to a public bathroom where men and women could use the same bathroom? Is it simply unisex bathrooms, or is there another agenda at work here that goes far beyond simply taking your turn using the facilities? Does it have to do with the bigger agenda, especially that of the transgendered rights groups? We're going to be talking about that with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Welcome back this Monday afternoon, the 25th of April. A little bit later, we'll be doing our series Top Three Verses with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, talking about Christians and civil government. You can join us with questions or comments, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or our beloved on-demand listeners use the Issues Etc. comment line whenever, wherever you listen, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about transgender bathrooms and all that seems to be going along with it. There's a lot of baggage here. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, a regular guest, founding president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Oddly enough, and this is not characteristic of you, you find yourself in some rather awkward agreement with a feminist you've been recently reading. What did she say, and why do you agree?
Well, the transgender issue is something that has radicalized a lot of different people. And I have been following for some time the fact that the sexual revolution requires us to believe something rather peculiar about men and women. And the sexual revolution wants us to believe that there's no difference between men and women. And you and I and every Christian listening to this program believe that God created us male and female and that he knew what he was doing and that this is a basic fact of the universe. It's just a fact that there is such thing as men and women. And the transgender movement, actually the whole of the sexual revolution, has always had a problem with that. Well, it turns out that there's a subgroup of radical lesbian separatists who believe very strongly that men and women are different. And they see the transgender movement as a movement by men to basically invade women's spaces. So I read this rather interesting book called Gender Hurts, by such a feminist. She's based in Australia. And she's talking about the fact that transgender men want the right to be part of the sisterhood, the lesbian feminist sisterhood, and they want to show up at lesbian events. And the women are like, no, you don't count as a woman. Get out of here. You know. So these all-women spaces that are really quite radical all-women spaces don't want to have anything to do with these with men who are what they perceive as men who are acting like women so that they can have access to women's spaces. So it's a very unusual situation for me to be in, but the fact is, on the basic premise, we agree that there is such a thing as male and female, and it's and it's permanent, and it's real, and it's not something that's socially, completely socially constructed or deconstructed or reconstructed.
This is, I just want to explore this a little bit. It struck me several months ago, we've been talking about this issue off and on for several months at least, and it struck me that the homosexual rights movement, whatever else you want to say about it, is rooted pretty strongly in the notion of gender. Now, there are people in that movement who want to make gender fluid, but they're really being radically inconsistent with their own worldview. But it's rooted pretty strongly in, if I'm a homosexual man and I like men and I'm attracted to men, that kind of, I've kind of made that my identity, and you can't really do that without a difference between men and women. You can't do that. Laying aside the whole issue of bisexuality, it seems to me that there is a collision course set between the gender-rooted notion in the gay rights movement and the genderless notion or the fluid gender notion of the transgender movement. What do you think?
Well, you know, that's been latent in the movement all along. You know, every once in a while, you and I would make this point. We'd sort of stumble over this fact that to the most radical people in the gay rights movement, male and female is completely socially constructed, but sexual orientation is absolutely given, and you can't reconstruct that at all. You know, don't even think about getting reparative therapy for your sexual orientation, because that's what you're born with, you know. And so the deeper notion, you know, I have puzzled for a while over how can you make both of those things true at the same time? You know, what is there? Because you and I are kind of saying those can't both be simultaneously true, you know. But actually, the way they do it, the way in their minds it works, is that the concept of is that the body is the thing which is suspect, Todd. It's the human body which is suspect. It's the human body which is fluid and which we can reject or construct or reconstruct. And so the concept of gender goes down with the whole concept of the physicality of the person. So if you like being a boy, you can stay a boy, but you don't have to like being a boy. Gender, your gender identity is something you can construct for yourself. And what they're thinking is that it used to be that society constructed your gender, and that was oppressive when society constructed your gender. But now we can construct it for ourselves, and so that's freedom, okay? And so behind that is a notion of freedom, which says that I am permitted to overcome nature itself, using enough technology, using enough cultural hardware or software, and technological hardware, we can overcome nature itself. That's, I think, the deepest underlying premise of this whole trajectory that we're on.
But isn't this really, as you've pointed out before, yet another example of kind of the well-heeled, technology-laden, fairly affluent, upper-middle-class who can afford to do these things, saying, well, I'm going to go ahead and do it because I can afford to do it? It doesn't work so well if you don't have the money for all of the therapies and the surgeries, does it?
Well, that's right. And the other point about this, Todd, is that if you look at who's promoting it, the business community has come out in force to favor the most radical form of this agenda. And, you know, lesbian separatists are being thrown under the bus, along with believing Christians are being thrown under the bus. And I have no idea why PayPal is so invested in this. I have no idea why these different companies are so invested in it that they would, you know, take a sledgehammer to the little state of North Carolina. Meanwhile, some of them do business with Islamic states that are, let us say, considerably less charitable towards people with inconclusive gender identities and unusual sexual orientations, if we could just put it gently. So these companies, you know, talk about inconsistency. But the fact is that without the money of the very large donors, this would not be happening. The Human Rights Campaign is driving this ship. Without the money that they have, this would not be happening. Without the support of the business community, the very large businesses, not small business, mom and pop free market little businesses don't want to do this kind of thing. They don't want to be involved in it. They're nice to their customers. Most of them have a restroom that has, you know, one stall, and you use the bathroom when it's empty. Anybody uses the bathroom when it's empty. That's not the point. The point is that this ideology is somehow empowering that you're already powerful. And that's, I think, what we have to be keeping an eye on.
You have degrees in economics. You taught economics at Yale and George Mason universities. Can you explain to me why major retail chain like Target, why PayPal, basically the place online through which billions of dollars pass every year, why would they come out publicly in favor of transgender bathrooms? Does it make simple economic sense?
I think they're doing it because they can. I think they're big enough that they think they can do whatever they want, and they'll get away with it, and that's probably true. They don't expect any kind of backlash because the people they associate with are other people like themselves. You know, the decision makers in those corporations are other people like themselves, and so they don't expect any big backlash, and they know from experience that the people who are the sex radicals, those people can cause all kinds of headaches. They can cause all kinds of public relations nightmares for people. And so, are they trying to avoid public relations nightmare? Are they trying to make nice with the Obama administration, which has the ability to favor businesses that it likes and harm businesses that it doesn't like? It could be some combination of those things, or maybe they really believe it. I don't know. But it certainly doesn't make business sense from the standpoint of, are my customers going to be upset if I do one thing rather than the other? They're going to upset far more customers who are worried about their daughters going encountering a man in the girls' room than they are from transgender people who are going to be upset because they can't pass and use the gender, the restroom of the gender that they say they are without. Creating a firestorm. And you know, that's the other thing that's really interesting about this. If transgenderism were true, which I don't think it is true, Bruce Jenner is a man, okay? Bruce Jenner is a man. He is not a woman. Bruce Jenner is a man. If he were really successfully passing as a woman, he could walk into the women's room, take care of his business, and walk out, and nobody would be bothered by it. But they can't do that. Whether it's because they're not really convincing as a woman, or because they're going in and calling some kind of attention to themselves, which obviously has been happening in some of the locker room cases where men have gone in and basically undressed in front of little girls and stuff. If all you wanted to do was be comfortable using the bathroom, if that's really all that was at stake, this would have been settled a long time ago. But that's not what's at stake. What's at stake is the degendering of society. That's what's at stake.
On the bigger kind of corporate scale, why is it that corporate America, that was once neutral on controversial issues, they just stayed away from controversial issues for the sake of the bottom line, or played both sides of the fence, either way? Why have they sided with the lifestyle left so suddenly?
That is a very good question. But let's be clear. It hasn't been just all of a sudden, Todd. They haven't sided with lifestyle left all of a sudden. If you just look back 10 years and you ask who are the sponsors for the gay pride parades in the major cities around the country, you will see a whole list of major corporations, right? Now, if you ask yourself, would Wells Fargo Bank, would Chase Bank, would any of these other kind of corporations, would they sponsor the local Walk for Life? Not on your life do they do that, okay? Look at them supporting Planned Parenthood. A lot of big businesses support Planned Parenthood. Would they support your local pregnancy care center? Not on your life do they support that. So the bigger question is, why is it that the big corporations have gone in for the sexual revolution generally, not simply this latest stage, right? But why have they been after it all along? That's the question we have to answer.
They are, after all, in business. I mean, they do have to answer to investors, or they have to answer to stockholders and things like that. The bottom line does still matter, I think. What can be done to wake up corporate America on this?
Well, the interesting interesting point about this is, and I get some pushback sometimes when I point this out, but if you look at what the first step of the feminist movement was to say that women should be working in the workforce on the same terms as men all the time. And when I first looked at that, you know, years ago as a young economist, I thought, well, gee, the object here is these are a bunch of Marxist women who want to create control in the economy in a way that they couldn't get any other way. And so saying that men and women have to be different all the time allows them to go in and fiddle with different aspects of the labor market. And of course, that's largely true. But if you look at it, it's very interesting to see how quickly corporate America adapted itself to that new situation, right? I mean, they fussed a little bit at the beginning, but very quickly they adapted to the new realities and the new regulations. And there are quite a few regulations that are designed to make women and men identical at every moment in their earnings, in their life cycle earnings situation, right? A 24-year-old woman is supposed to be treated like a 24-year-old man, and so on and so forth. And there are quite a few regulations that do that, Todd. And the question is, why did corporate America just kind of go along with it? And I think part of the reason they did it is because the feminist movement delivered to corporate America a new source of labor that was very eager to prove itself, that was very eager to show that they were the best workers ever, that they were really committed to the labor force, that weren't going to let a little thing like a baby stop them. And, of course, I'm talking about the highly educated woman. The highly educated woman has been a big boon to corporate America, in spite of all the regulations and so on. These are very good, reliable, well-educated, committed workers whom the feminist movement has basically delivered to corporate America. And so now those women, many of them, are in positions of decision-making. And which kind of women get to achieve the highest positions within corporate America? Who is, relatively speaking, favored by that environment? Well, it's the woman without any children. It's the woman who has sacrificed career and children and marriage for the sake of her career. That's who's going to make it to the top, okay? And so her values are not necessarily going to reflect the values of Mrs. Wilkin or Mrs. Schwartz or Dr. Morse, who you know, we like our careers, we like our work, but we like our kids too. And we want a corporate environment and a social political environment that offers some protection for the permanence of marriage and the stability of family life and all those other things. Well, you know, Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan, I don't think that's on their radar screen as an important value, right? But they're making decisions for the whole country, right? And likewise with your news anchor, you know, your female news anchor who's at the top of her game, who's never had any children, the academics who are at the top of their game, who are influencing policy, politicians, and so on, all the way through the line. The kind of person who's favored by those rules is the person who has different values than you and I have. And I think that is a part of what we're looking at here.
Before I let you go, Jennifer, one of the things you've recently written about, and we've talked about it before, is the totalitarian nature of the sexual revolution at this point, that it's proving itself to be kind of the all or nothing and willing to use every mechanism of the state to achieve its goals. You saw this coming a long time ago, didn't you?
Well, yeah, yes, it's kind of creepy to think about it, but yes, I called this a long time ago. I've been writing recently in The Blaze, that online site, and I hope that your listeners will go and check out The Blaze, because I'm a regular columnist over there now. I write there once a week, and so your readers, your listeners, you know, your very loyal Issues Etc. listeners whom I hear from all the time, it will be just great to have you guys come over there and chime in the comment section and share and so on and so forth. But yes, I have had a column over there where I talk about the totalitarian nature of the sexual state, what I call the sexual state. And the reason that I call it that is because what those sexual revolutionaries are trying to do is something that is not really possible. It's not really possible to build a whole society around the idea that sex doesn't make babies, or around the idea of gender fluidity, like we just talked about. You know, those ideas that there's really truly no difference between men and women, and that everything you see is, you know, somehow an evidence of social justice. These things can't be done in the ordinary course of things. And so it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of effort from the state to prop up those kinds of propositions, because people are going to see evidence to the contrary on a regular basis. They're going to see that men and women are different. They're going to see that sex actually makes babies, and the kids really truly need their own parents. People see evidence against that on a regular basis. So what the state has to do is to stamp out dissent, and it has to feed us a steady diet of propaganda to overcome the natural evidence that flows our way. And so I've had a couple of columns over there that have, in effect, had that theme behind it.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. You can read her recent column, Male Privilege and Women's Bathrooms, and the rest of her columns for The Blaze at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're very welcome.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Wolf Miller. The remainder of the program today, our series Top Three Verses, we'll be talking about the top three verses for Christians and civil government. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.